Hello. Hello and welcome to the Connect 2 podcast.
Can you be louder, please?
My name is Jeff Cullen, and I believe this is the 12th episode of the third season.
And it is. You are correct. Indeed. Wonderful. Correct.
We're adjusting some sound level stuff here.
Well, hopefully, I've noticed our podcast seems a little quiet relative to other podcasts. I'm going to try and change that for this episode. So
maybe that could become what we're known for, the quiet podcast,
you know,
because that's what people are looking for.
You're looking for calmness. So if you're new to the channel, rate, review, subscribe. I ask every week and nobody actually.
There you go. It's the bane of all YouTubers.
We do have podcasters. Lots of people. We have people listening, but yeah. we don't have
people will not commit. It's just a problem with our civilization now.
It costs nothing.
Yeah.
It's not like getting
married. Maybe that's the problem.
You're not getting married to
the
podcast.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe if it costs a dollar, you get more people that see value in it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Coffee. We have coffee today.
We do. And that's quite the sporty looking outfit, Mark.
It's just the...
You're looking sporty.
It is...
Sporty.
It is... we have a coffee, and it is from Red Deer.
From Red Deer? The coffee capital of the world.
Yeah.
Cocaine and Red Deer and coffee. Well, yeah.
It is from Birdie Coffee.
Mm.
It's called La Leres Franca Faleros.
Nice.
From Red Deer. And the source is Minas Gerais, Brazil.
Cool. I heard our podcast is big in Red Deer.
Yeah.
We have a lot of listeners in there.
Dark chocolate and hazelnut.
Oh.
Those are the flavors.
There you go.
It's good. It's good. It's tasty. Tasty, tasty. Okay, got any dad jokes?
Do I have a dad joke? Yeah, I got a couple here. So, I gotta admit, just reading these off the internet. Two guys walked into a bar. The third guy ducked.
I got a longer one.
Okay.
There's this grocery store. Produce manager is there, and this woman comes up early in the morning. Says, "You got any broccoli?" And, the guy says, "No, we don't have any broccoli. We'll have it tomorrow."
Okay.
And he carries on. He's unpacking his fruit and vegetables. And about an hour later, the woman comes back and says, "You got any broccoli?" And he says, "No, I got no broccoli. It'll be in tomorrow." And so she goes away. And he carries on. And an hour later, she comes back again. And she says, "You got any broccoli?" And he goes, "Do you know, how do you spell cat as in catastrophic? C-A-T.
Okay.
And he says to her, "How do you spell dog as in dogmatic? D-O-G. Okay. How do you spell fuck as in broccoli?" He says, "There's no fucking broccoli." That's what I've been trying to tell you.
That's great. We have no bananas today and no broccoli. Young man walks into a pharmacy.
Sorry, I thought looking, that was funny.
That is funny. Looking nervous, goes to the back of the pharmacy, talks to the pharmacist. Pharmacist, "Can I help you?" He says, "I'm looking for some condoms." Pharmacist says, "No problem, we can help you out. Because we have an array here, different package sizes, 3, 6, 12. What do you think you need?" Young man says, "Well, I don't know. I'm having dinner with this girl I've been seeing at her parents' house, and then we're going out after, and I have a feeling I'm gonna get lucky. So, and then, you know, and after we do it once, I'm sure she's a bit of a wild child. I'm sure she'll be wanting to go. So you better give me the package of 12 later that evening at the family table. Young man is offered the chance to say grace, and he starts praying, and he's praying hard. Like, he's praying for a long time. After about 3 minutes, the girl leans over and she says, "You didn't tell me you were this religious." He says, "You didn't tell me your father was a pharmacist."
Yeah, that's an excellent joke. Okay.
What'd you learn?
What did I learn? I learned a couple of things. You might actually find this. We're going to use a little bit of, in theory, multimedia.
Is it science? If it works. Is it, did you learn something about
science? So you know David McCallum, the man from Uncle, Ilya...
Kuryakin.
Kuryakin. He just recently passed away.
Right? I know. He was in his 90s, wasn't he?
He was. He was 90... I think it was like 91.
Yeah.
It says...
I got to say, now that I start knowing people in my family who are 90. In their 90s, I'm not all that impressed, but 90. It used to be like... Oh man, he was so old. Now it's suddenly like he's only 91. Man.
So he's quite
too soon.
He was in a lot of things. He was in The Great Escape.
Yes.
He was in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. He played Ducky Mallard.
Yeah, and CIS.
Yes. 450 episodes.
Wow.
That's shocking.
It's shocking on two levels. That's A, that he was in all those episodes, and B, that there's been that many episodes of NCIS. Wow.
Shocking number.
That is. Yeah. That was Mark Harmon.
Yep. But he also did some music.
Did he now?
Yeah. And in the late 60s.
So around about the time he would have been on The Man from U.N.C.L.E.? Well, I guess it's more mid-60s.
He did this one song that is... quite familiar.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm going to play a bit of this. We'll see just a little sample so you can get a sense of it.
Does it rival William Shatner's Rocket Man rendition?
Oh, no, this is way better. And there's a backstory. There's a reason.
Okay.
Does it sound familiar? Okay, that's it. So... that was sampled as part of a really big hit.
It's still not ringing a bell.
Oh, it will in a second. It's Snoop Dogg's song.
Oh, really?
Dr. Dre sampled it, and it's been sampled by 43 other rap artists.
Wow. What was the original song then?
It's called The Edge. It was kind of this James Bond-ish kind
of.
Okay, yeah. Had that vibe.
Yeah.
And it's good. It's good for what it was. Like, it was just a jazz thing. There's no singing or nothing, but it was sampled by Dr. Dre, and then it's been resampled. So he's like, he's not only a quite accomplished actor.
Yeah.
He's also like a generational
inspirational musician.
Yeah, from this late 60s and
Did you see the remake Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie a couple of years back?
Did. Yeah.
You know, I really liked it. Henry Cavill and unfortunately Armie Hammer, which is probably why there's been no sequel because he's kind of fallen out of favor.
Didn't he have some sort of sexual scandal?
He did. That involved cannibalism.
What?
Yeah. So fantasies of eating people, women in particular.
And, oh my God.
Which, hey, I mean, you know, a fantasy inside your head, but I think the scandal was related to some sexual violence and forcing dates to do stuff they didn't want to do. So he's like out. Apparently he's selling real estate in Las Vegas now or something. Like he's out of the acting game altogether.
Wow.
But unfortunately, because it's such a weird thing, but that was not a bad movie. Like Henry Cavill was good as Napoleon Solo and he was Ilya Kuryakin.
Mm-hmm.
I quite enjoyed it. And the soundtrack to that movie is really good. It's like a throwback to the 60s style. Speaking of, you know, mid-60s, a lot of instrumental and a lot of that vibe from the old James Bond movie. So, yeah, too bad. Well, I think Cavill would make a good James Bond. He's a bit old, but I think he'd make a good James Bond.
Well, this is the problem. Like, once they get established to the point where they might be an interesting James Bond, they usually are aging out. And the other thing I find is that if you think about all the people that have actually been chosen as James Bond, they've not been famous before they became they might be stage actors.
That's
or
true.
That kind of
that's true.
They're usually not
Well, with the exception of Pierce Brosnan, because he'd been on
TV.
Remington Steele.
Remington Steele.
Right. And then, but yeah, you're right. Daniel Craig had been in a couple of movies. He was great in Munich.
Was a stage actor.
Yeah. John Connery was
a model.
Yep. So was George Lazenby.
Yeah, I think Sean Connery might have been a plumber too.
Before. Yeah, there's a great story about George Lazenby.
Well, he was an Australian actor.
Right, but the producers of the Broccolis, right? They were concerned that he might be gay.
Yeah.
So I read the story where during the period when they were casting him, they sent a lady of the night up to his hotel room that they paid for to sort of tempt him, and he partook. And so it was like, oh, I guess he's not gay then. I guess he can be our James Bond. Told that story years later. You know, it was like, hello? Yes, I've been sent up to party. Come on in. I don't think he was married at the time. He was like, okay, whatever.
No, I think he was.
So he was only James Bond the one time. But, you know, he's really not a bad Bond. Well, that's such a strange movie. Well, but
apparently he was terrible on the set.
Really?
He was terrible on the set. And he held out for more money. And that's why he didn't get it into the next James Bond.
Okay.
And
Roger Moore was also wasn't super famous, but he was quite well known because he played the Saint.
Yeah, and
Simon Templar, and
Kind of similar to Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah,
that's right. TV fame,
exactly. Yeah. So, anyways, I think Cavill would be a good James Bond, even though he's a little bit older.
Well, and you, so
he would be super.
I told you that I'd gone to Vancouver this week.
I
briefly went to Gibson. So,
oh yeah,
we went on my brother's boat. We went to Gibson's.
Your brother-in-law?
Sorry, my brother-in-law.
Yeah,
and
I don't see Gary having a boat.
No. So we went to Gibson's, which is famous for the beachcomb.
That's where that picture came from. I saw that picture of Molly's Reach.
Yeah,
yeah.
I took a picture of Molly's Reach. So I thought a couple of things I learned about it. So the Beachcombers is the longest running Canadian show, with 350 episodes, or longest running dramatic series.
Okay.
Okay. Its last episode was in 1990.
Yep. That makes sense.
And three of the stars are past.
Bruno Gerussi,
Robert Clothier was Relic.
Mm.
And, I believe, Pat John, who was Jesse.
I don't remember.
He was the Indian, the native.
RCMP guy?
No. The RCMP guy is still alive. He lives in Red Deer.
Oh, really?
But, yeah. But
perhaps he partakes of this coffee.
Pat John was he played the young Indigenous guy.
Okay.
Who was Nick Adonidas's partner or help.
Oh, whatever, yeah. Right? Now, I have to admit, I never really watched the show. I mean, a lot of people in Quebec, it was just not that big, you know?
Yeah.
And the other part, I knew about it because how could you not? It was just like, it's part of Canadian tapestry, right? I always assume it was in the Maritimes.
Okay.
And I was totally, I can't remember when I found out. It might have been when I moved to British Columbia and at some point found out that this is where the Beachcombers was set, and it totally blew my mind. I'm like, I thought it was like in Nova Scotia or something. And they're like, no, it's here on this, you know, we have an ocean here as well. So you go.
Well, the other interesting thing about it is, so I sent you a picture of Molly's Reach, which is the was the restaurant in the TV show. But it was never built as a restaurant. It was built in 1934 as a hardware store repurposed exclusively for the TV show to look for exterior shots like a restaurant.
Oh, really?
It only became a restaurant after the show was over. And they repurposed it, and it's up for sale now. It's not running.
Oh, is that right?
It's not very big, but it's pretty cool. And yeah, and they have the Persephone, which is the boat that Nick had. It's set up on a pedestal nearby. So it was pretty cool. Like it was cool going to Gibson. There cool little do. Place.
So we won't do it today, but we could do an episode on Canadian shows. Okay. Like King of Kensington.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah. Well, Beachcombers, yeah. Right?
Apparently there's a show on Mr. Dressup that's quite something.
I heard like a documentary. Yeah. Now it's not going to ruin my Mr. Dressup memories, is it?
No.
It's not a Bill Cosby situation.
No, I don't know.
Oh, like good. That. Thank goodness. It's all okay. Good. So what else did you learn?
Well, those are two things I learned. What did you learn?
I learned a couple things, but I only really remember one. It's been a hell of a week, but...
You remember one?
I remember one.
That's what I had for breakfast this morning. Yeah, that's what I learned.
No. So apparently the CEO of Levi's put to rest a dilemma or a... I think it was unclear because the question has been, should you wash your denim? And he apparently has came out and has... confirmed that no, you should not. You
really?
Should not wash denim.
Okay.
Or if you do, you should wash it sparingly, right?
Really?
Because people are complaining a lot about
tears and rips.
Jeans not lasting. No, but
it's all the tears and
Well, if they're pre-torn, but no, but people have been complaining, and he said, yeah, no, the it breaks down the fibers to, like, the last thing you should ever do is put it in a washing machine. In fact, he recommends washing it sparingly. Like he said, if you spill food on it or something, you got to spot clean it as best possible. And the best way to wash your jeans, according to the CEO of Levi's, is wear them in the shower and then just soap them up with regular soap like you would, if you were washing your legs, and then take them off and let them dry. Just hang them to dry, like after you've rinsed them. So, but don't put them in the washing machine because that's where it beats the hell out of them, or the dryer. And that's why they don't last as long. So,
okay,
there you go.
Sounds a bit,
so now you know.
Sounds a bit weird, but anyway, yeah. I've heard about people who have had jeans and don't wash them at all.
Yeah,
and for like a year at a time.
Well, that's just kind of what he's recommending. Don't wash them for like a year, or as long as you can get away without washing them. But when you do have to wash them, don't put them in the washing machine. He also talked about jeans are quite consumptive to produce in terms of water. It's being environmental, right? Because the cotton and all that. And of course, if you're washing them in his mind unnecessarily, then you're wasting more water, in your washing machine. So put them on, hop in the shower, because you're going to shower anyways. And
I guess he's not getting support or from Unilever or any of those.
Probably not.
Procter and Gamble.
Use Dr. Squatch on your denim.
Okay, so today we're talking about the war in the Middle East.
And the latest war in the Middle East. Perpetual war in the Middle
East. Well, it is perpetual war. And apparently, caveat, neither of us is experts in the Middle East for sure. But
safe to say,
we consume a lot of information
in
media. And, apparently, like, which side do you fall on? Often depends on where your starting point is.
Ah, that's a good point.
And that, but there's always something that's happened before that.
Right.
So, and what happened on the weekend, when Hamas attacked Israel is horrific.
Oh, it's absolutely.
Unbelievably horrific.
They're calling it the, Israeli 9/11.
Yeah, but the flip side of this is that what Israel is doing back is equally horrific, because a lot of the targeting is to people that are not the perpetrators.
Absolutely.
So there's a couple of really, it's shocking what happened.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen some posts, stories that are coming out. Now, I have to say that I know an individual, someone in my life who is someone I respect a lot. He has family, extended family in Israel, his father-in-law and his wife's two sisters. And so I was talking to him yesterday, and he's being somewhat sanguine about it, but especially, I guess, his father-in-law refuses to go to a shelter. Right. They have a shelter like in their building, and he's telling his daughter that he's 91. I'm not going to the shelter. It's smelly down there. She's like, please go to the shelter. Goes, I'm 91 years old. What the hell? Right. Now he's under the dome, although a lot of bombs have gotten through. Well, just by the sheer volume of it, right? But still, man, these are tough people.
So so Hamas did a multi-pronged attack.
Yep.
They fired between 2,500 and 3,000 rockets into Israel. I mean, it's an astonishing amount.
Yep.
And
when you look at the map and you realize just how small geographically that area is.
Well, the Gaza Strip. It's amazing, right? So the Palestinians live in two main areas. One is the Gaza Strip and the other is the West Bank. The West Bank is not nearly as heavily populated as... Right.
Would that be Golan Heights around the West Bank?
Yeah, that's the West Bank. So, but the Gaza Strip has been compared to an open-air prison.
Right. Well, basically. Because
basically it is. Yeah. You know, people can't leave.
Yeah.
So even if you...
Well, and now the Israelis control the power, the water.
But they have all along.
Yeah. No, I know, but...
So there's only three crossings into the Gaza Strip. There's a 60-kilometer long fence. It's a very small area. It is 365.
Now, is it fully landlocked? And here's my...
No, it is water.
Okay.
But there is a no boating zone.
Okay. So the Israeli Navy would blockade it.
So there is a small area that they can fish. Okay. And then that's it. Everything else is blocked off. So you can, there was an international airport, but it was destroyed in 2002. So there is no air access.
Wow.
There is one crossing is into Egypt, and Egypt tightly controls access as well. Sure. So there's like a number of buses, and you know, there could be two or there could be 10 buses, but as soon as those buses are full, that's the extent of the number of people that are allowed in to Egypt and are allowed to cross. And even if you have a visa and if you have permission, all that stuff, if you're not on the bus, you're not going.
Right.
And then there's two more in Israel. Israel controls power, controls water. 90% of the Gaza Strip, the population has no access to clean water. And 70% are unemployed. Here's the biggest thing that I found shocking. The median age of somebody in Gaza. So it's one of the most densely populated places on the planet, comparable to the densest parts of London.
Really?
Very densely population. There's 2 million people in 365 square kilometers.
2 million people?
Yeah. And the median age is 18. More than half of the population is below 18.
Wow.
And they have never left Gaza.
Sure.
And there is no prospect for them to ever leave Gaza.
I know, it's
and
wild.
The time at which the borders were locked up was basically the time of most of these 18-year-olds and less.
Yeah,
It was before that.
They've lived their entire lives in basically a prison.
Yeah, and the population has doubled since 2000. So in 20 years, it went from 1 million inhabitants, same size area, to 2 million.
And what is the population of Israel? Do we know?
I don't know off the top of my
head. I'm sure the Google machine could tell us.
Sure. But, the other problem is it's had, for many years, it's had insufficient power. So they have... more than half the power comes from Israel, which has been cut off.
Right.
The other part comes from their own power locally.
Right.
It usually only runs for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
It only covers about 17% of what they need.
Right. Which is being likely targeted now by the Israelis, right? Yeah. Knocking the power out.
So they can't recharge phones. They're cut off. Yes. They can't, there's no power.
Yeah.
And they've basically been attacked. Like it's shocking. And the rocket barrage from Hamas was used essentially as cover for these basically incursions.
Right.
Now
where are all the weapons coming from?
Well,
or how are all the weapons getting into the Gaza Strip?
Well, apparently there's two rumored perpetrators of that. One is Iran.
Yep. No, for sure.
The other is Russia.
Right.
because Russia is looking for a distraction.
Physically, how do the weapons get in, I wonder?
Oh, well, that is a good question, right? Because what has been a major issue is the fact that Israelis were caught off guard. They were totally surprised by this.
Yep. Well, apparently, so my friend who is, and his son lived in Israel until recently, and is actually a counter-terrorist specialist. So my friend was saying that Netanyahu is done, right? Like he's done.
He's just
formed. When this is done, when he's out, like, because this is such a failure. He wasn't all that popular in the first place, right? Because he's extreme right wing, and he's under investigation for corruption. And now they're saying, according to my friend, who, you know, is my best source about Israel, and this is it. He's out.
Well, apparently the whole thing with Netanyahu is that a lot of the decisions he's made to stay in power are related to creating the circumstances that led to this.
Yeah.
So when you completely isolate these guys, give them no hope, nothing to look forward to, they're going to get angry.
Yep. Now, Bo of the Fifth had a thing, because people are calling for the sort of international people who are calling for restraint on the part of Israel. And he's one of them. And he was talking about this is a history, because one of the questions was, what could Hamas possibly hope to gain from this?
Well, that's a really good question, because that,
in his opinion,
it's really unclear.
And he says that there's a playbook, right? When you're in a asymmetric kind of conflict, the playbook, and he says there's actually a playbook, you can look it up on the internet, right? Is to create the next generation of sympathizers, right? So in his view, and it's always just an opinion, Hamas wants to irritate, well, to the extreme, they want retaliation from the Israelis.
So that they bomb and create new Hamas.
So people. It's going to be, and like he said, the leadership of this kind of groups, they're never there. Yeah. They're never the ones that are going to be getting, you know, the brunt of it, right? Yeah. It's they're remote, they're in Iran, they're somewhere else. And, you know, the best strategic move for Israel, although people understand, particularly with the hostage situation, it's sort of a rock and a hard place, would be to somehow retaliate in a proportionate or even less than proportionate way. Right. To not fall into this sort of trap.
Well, it's,
but there's so much tension in that. There's so much history. And this was such a devastating attack that.
Well, if you support Israel, you're going like, how horrible what Hamas did, and what Hamas did is horrible.
Absolutely.
And they are a terrorist group.
For sure.
They've also been in control of the Gaza Strip for like 18 years. There's been no elections.
Yes.
In fact, apparently they're afraid of elections. So that may also have been played into part of their justification for why they thought this was a good
idea. So the average person is, once again, sort of the victim and the pawn of these political
power
leadership, right? They're not the ones that are... I mean, some of their adherents, obviously. And I can understand where.
So, and if you.
It's because of the hostage thing in particular.
Well, and I think it's a circumstance where Israel retaliating and firing rockets and barrage at this densely populated, mostly kids.
Right.
That doesn't look good.
No. And
Hamas doing what they did. It was really bad. So
I understand they took out a hospital.
Yeah. I mean, like this,
there's
nothing good about this circumstance. Everybody loses.
The only restraint from my friend was saying is because of the hostages. If they hadn't taken.
Well, and apparently the issue with the hostages is Netanyahu has been negotiating for years with Hamas for exchange of hostages.
Yeah.
So those hostages are valuable.
Well,
I mean,
you wonder if the military might not supplant him, and Because now they're talking. Yeah, because now they're talking about they're going to go in and it'll be street fighting, clearing out houses, house by house. You know,
clear them out where? Like this. So apparently, this is the issue. Like way back when, the last time Israel kind of did stuff like this, which was in the early 2000s. It's like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
They like people would be told, get out of the north part of Gaza, go to the south,
right?
Because we're going in to clear out Hamas fighters or whatever. And they go to the south, and then they'd say, okay, we're coming into the south, and they're going like, there's no place to go back to because they've destroyed it. So there's right. like, and it's a, such a small place.
Yeah. So again, I speak with little knowledge, so take that into account. But when I heard what Bo the Fifth was talking about, I thought, wouldn't it be something? I don't know if this is even feasible, but imagine if the Israeli government, rather than retaliate the way that they have been provoked to, right? Imagine if they said, okay, here's the deal. We're not going to shut off the water and the power, right? We're not going to bomb, right? But we're giving you, I don't know, 10 days, right? People of Gaza. Now, I don't know what would happen afterwards, right? Because there are obviously two sides to this, and they've been keeping these people down for, but imagine if they sort of came to their senses and said, okay, here's the deal. We're not going to cut off water. We're not going to cut off power. You have 10 days. We want the hostages back. And we want you to identify, basically give us the Hamas terrorists, the ringleaders, the whoever's been perpetrated. You know, the average guy in Gaza who is just like, I run a tailor shop. I got nothing to do with this. I've been, you know, give us the folks who did this. And then we're going to talk about peace talks. And imagine, I mean, I don't know if that would ever happen, but that would help. That would certainly change the game.
It would
right?
change the game pretty
because
dramatic.
Now Hamas is like, wait, what?
Wait,
and
what, like, what?
Aren't you going to retaliate and
make, bomb the crap out of us
so we can get new martyrs? And it'd be like, nope. All we want is the ones of you that are responsible and our hostages back. And then after that, we'll see what we do. But that's the step one, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Right?
But the people, you're going to have...
Because heavy, I just saw
heavy emotions from the people that have been lost. I mean, yeah, just a lot of people.
I just dead. Saw. I know. I mean, it's not. There was a reel on YouTube, and I don't know who the guy was. Unfortunately, these things pop up.
Yeah, yeah.
This was before. Obviously, it was recorded before this. But he's a Jewish man from the United States, talking about going to Israel, and everybody telling him and his group, you know, don't go into the Arab zone, right? They'll hate you there. And he said, you know what? We went in and I interacted with like a shopkeeper and he'd never met an Israeli, never met a Jew, right? And it was just the most, like, there's such a misunderstanding because the people, again, not the political organizations, the political but just the man on the street, right? They have been taught that the Jews hate them. And then of course the average, when you, your whole life, you've been taught that they hate you and they want to kill you. Well, what do you want to do? Well, I hate them and I want to kill them too. Right. But this guy was talking about how they went in, you know, and they were pretty nervous and they were keeping, you know, a close eye, but they had this just person to person interaction where this person basically never really met a Jewish person before. And, you know, it's like they say, I don't hate you on a personal level. Right. And now that I've got to meet you, huh, look at that. Like, you're not like a three-horned monster, right? Now, did it solve anything? Probably not. But it was an experience of humanity that, at the end of the day, it's often not the person. And unfortunately, like you were saying, these are the folks that are now going to pay the price because they're just living there.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Israelis are coming in and you know, vengefully cleaning house. Well, yeah. It's like, well, I didn't launch a rocket. Like, I'm just some guy living in this shitty situation, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's brutal.
Yeah. It's pretty awful. Brutal. And I mean,
but then war is always like that.
Well, right? And you know, so you say like what Russia is already dealing with this problem with Ukraine. Why would they want to, you know, instigate or foment Hamas acting against Israel? Well, It's like the whole adage, when you're in power and you're not doing so well and you're not popular, what do? You start a war.
Yep.
Right?
That's
and
right.
And then it distracts everybody and puts their attention somewhere else. So by doing this with Hamas, they've created a bad guy, a new bad guy.
Yep.
So that they're not so much the bad guy. Well, somebody else is the bad guy. I don't
think it's going to really work.
Well, apparently the appetite in the Republican Party for... The appetite in the Republican Party in the U.S. for funding Ukraine is dwindling.
But that's a lot. So the now Republican Party are a lost cause.
There's already some of them that are claiming that you should transfer all that money that was going to Ukraine to Israel. So it's not good. It's all bad.
Well, then, so the United States, that's another complicated situation because, you know, the evangelicals are big supporters of Israel. But like there's a YouTuber I watch, David
Duchovny. David and Goliath.
I can't remember his last name. He's Jewish, originally from Argentina, but anyways, he's talking about how but the big reason the evangelicals, it's all tied to like an end times prophecy and the Jews have to survive to a certain point and then Christ will come back and all the Jews will be killed. And so he's like, so, you know, all that support you have for Israel? No, thanks. We're good. Right. If that's the core of why you're supporting us, but there's large, you know, big political power behind that. Right. And then there's a lot of Jewish people in the United States. I think there's more in the US than there is in Israel.
Yeah.
And so they are also on the Democratic side. Most of them tend to be Democrats. And so there's always that influence of why the United States has to support Israel. And of course, it didn't take too long. They moved the Gerald Ford, the biggest aircraft carrier they have, has been moved into the Gulf. Oh yeah. And they've deployed two or three squadrons, to an air base in Italy.
Okay.
F-35s, F-22s, F-16s. Well, no, they don't necessarily want to get involved. What I've heard is that this is a message to Iran and any of the other Arab countries to basically stay the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Because if you start mixing it up, we're gonna slap you down, right? Yeah. We may not get into the actual conflict, but we'll put a no-fly zone, you know, and that'll be the end of that. So it's just these subtle messages, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what China's involvement is, if anything.
I don't know.
Maybe they're hoping it's time to invade Taiwan.
Yeah. Wow. This is.
Although I've been listening to an economist. I got to start writing these names down, man. Who's been making quite a strong argument about how China is basically it's near its end as well.
Well, it's got issues because
massive issues.
They've had a big housing boom and one of their biggest developers basically has gone bankrupt or the Chinese equivalent of bankrupt.
Well, so he's got a whole argument economically why China is basically a lot of it's been smoke and mirrors, right? Mm. Their economy has been propped up and then Z now apparently is totally isolated. So he's,
is that how you pronounce his last name?
Yeah. Okay. He's, purged everybody in the, Chinese Communist Party that would have been a conduit to kind of like Putin has done, right? They become so isolated that now you're no longer getting, you know, actual information. Yeah. But there's these massive cities that they have built, again, all about stimulating the economy, but nobody lives in these places. And it's just, and our population is getting older. The one child policy was kind of a oops, right? So they've got apparently some really, really serious problems. So this whole thing of the rise of China, he feels it's been a paper tiger.
Yeah.
That there's just not the internal capacity. So the US will remain the sovereign world leader unless they fall apart.
Wow. I mean,
because there's so much fracturing in that country.
Well, there's so it's much like, gridlock. Holy smokes. So much gridlock. And I was listening to this thing about the U.S. specifically that part of the issue is there's all these originalists, so particularly on the Supreme Court. So they basically are interpreting everything related to the Constitution based upon any laws that were in place at the time the Constitution was originally found, which is problematic on many, many
levels. Yeah, of course it is.
And but the issue is that there's also been this push. There's this thing called the Chevron. It's a Chevron decision, a landmark decision from like 20 or
okay, Chevron, the oil company, or
yeah, I think so. And it had to do with the executive branch and their administrative. I think it had to do with EPA, about the EPA being able to set rules when there's when it's vague in terms of the legislation from Congress.
Okay.
So, and there's been a pushback, basically a lot of Republicans and right-wing politicians basically saying this is government overreach. If it's not in the laws, they shouldn't be able to make rulings.
Right.
Administrative rulings. So it's basically administrative law. And the problem is that right now, Congress in the U.S. is completely dysfunctional. They're unable to pass much of any kind of legislation.
They've been dysfunctional for a while, but now it's really gone. It's
really gone crazy.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
So what ends up happening, I mean, they can't even pick a speaker. And so the problem is that if they do go to this thing and say that the government has overreached, and that if it's not in law, then those administrative agencies can't actually impose fines or whatever.
Right.
And that means that the people that are going to be making decisions on this stuff will be the judiciary, because it's no longer Congress. It's no longer the executive branch, which is where the experts presumably are. It will now be judges.
Right.
And it's going to
be. And then their whole judicial system has also been, is at its core political.
Well, it's at its core political, and going worse, like the Supreme Court doesn't have any conflict of interest or
I know.
Like it's
like the stuff like that they're
getting gifts and all the, you know, showing up at public speaking events.
It's unbelievable.
There's no pretense of unbiasedness.
No, but it's like it was all predicated on a different time where either there was a stronger code of collectivism,
and collectivism and conduct.
We just didn't know. Yeah, like there was some degree of restraint. I always joke around because, you know, we live in a place where politically it's either left or right.
Yeah.
Right? We're
it's pretty polarized right here.
And I, having grown up in the East and in Quebec, I've always been partial to the Liberal Party.
Right, right.
And so I will joke, it's only a half joke that I say, like, I like my corruption sort of down the middle, right? Because people are like, well, the Liberal Party, you know, how can you be a Liberal? They're terrible. They've done all these terrible things. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, they always kind of walk that middle line.
Well,
where
they campaign from the left,
yes,
and they rule from the right.
You know, we're socially progressive, economically conservative. But in order to straddle that, you can't go too far either way. And yeah, corruption. But, you know, it's like old timey corruption, right?
Well, it's
we're in bed with the corporations. And
I heard it.
And I'm always like, I can live with that.
I heard that to be a liberal, you have to be the ultimate contortionist.
Yes.
You have to be able to sit on the fence,
exactly,
and have your ear on the ground.
But here's the thing. That's the way the world really is.
Well,
you know,
yeah,
like, well, there's nothing black and white in the world.
The idea to have consensus is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
And honestly, to have this minority governments are usually pretty good. You get stuff done.
Well, you know, I've often thought, if you look at the European, some European countries, I mean, it tends to be probably not as efficient, but you have these countries where they have like 12 parties, mm-hmm, and they have to build these coalitions
exactly
to get anything done. And, you know, they're some of the most progressive places in the world. So the binary, thank God we have three parties. And I have to say the NDP over the last, 20 years has really kind of come up in it's because it used to be just like out in the wilderness, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But ever since Jack Layton, they've
become more relevant.
Absolutely. Because the two party binary system is just insane.
It
has been for a long time.
Well, I mean, the problem you can get into is like, I think both in Italy and in Israel, where there's a party that's kind of a right wing party, and rather than try and work with more moderates,
yeah,
they pick up these right wing nut bars.
Yes.
And I mean, actually, that's what's happened in the US.
Oh, absolutely.
Basically, there's the Freedom Caucus, which are super right wing Republicans, and they've held the Republican Party hostage.
Yep.
And because there's no attempt or very limited attempt for cooperation between the parties, like your team red or your team blue, and you don't give a shit about the other team at all.
That's right.
Or you want them to fail absolutely, and I'm not going to work with them.
Yeah.
And
it brings us back to that. Remember we talked about that definition of stupidity that Italian economist had come up with. Again, I can't remember his name now, but he wrote a paper on it. And he was saying, there's the ultimate stupid people are those who will damage others and damage themselves
in the process.
Right. That's the ultimate in his, it's a four quadrant model. Whereas what he terms bandits, of which there are not that many, are the people who will damage other people to a degree, but it's usually there's a logical benefit to it. Right.
Right. Right.
And the reason that there's a sort of self-limiting is because if you damage the other side too much, right, it begins to then impinge on you. Right. Right. So they always kind of restrain themselves. It's like robbing from your neighbor. So, if I take everything, and he's got nothing to lose, it's bad, right? But if I just take a little bit, kind of keep him sort of
coming back,
kind of hungry and thinking, then it's okay, right? But when it becomes too much of a crushing opposition, it's like Gaza.
Yeah.
When people have nothing to lose, they're
willing
at their
to,
most dangerous because of like, what the hell have I got to lose?
Got nothing to lose.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? No future, no hope, no, so.
And that's pretty bad, especially when you got all these kids.
Yeah.
An open air prison has been the comparison because, it's fenced in. They can't go anywhere. It really is kind of an open air prison.
Yep.
And you put a whole bunch of people in there, and what do? They make babies because they got nothing else to do.
That's right.
It's not good.
It's terrible.
It's terrible. So, anyway.
Well, we've solved nothing, but because the human condition, we are still. Actually, I was just listening to Sam Harris. It's a bit of an older video on a Lex Fridman podcast, and they were talking about consciousness and reality, but. Sam Harris made the point about how little we actually are evolved from the chimps that are our nearest, like he was saying, chimps have no idea about how the universe works, right? They have no, at least as far as we know, they have no concept, right? And we have amazingly evolved to having some minimal understanding of reality, but like he said, it might be less than 1%. We may understand actual reality less than 1% of what's really going on just because of our brains. And and this is where it all gets into idealism and does consciousness create reality, or is there actually an external reality that we are conscious of? And nobody knows, right? There's all these debates. So at the end of the day, it's still, we have a long way to go in terms of human evolution. Hopefully we'll make it to get beyond these things, right? Because we're still behaving very much like we're hanging from the trees, man.
Well, so there we go.
Happy times.
So peace and love, everybody. Try and get along. The solution to the Middle East is not what people are doing.
No, on either side.
On either side.
Yeah.
What kind of media are you consuming?
Well, there you go. I'm reading Ray Dalio's newest book, Speaking of tie into what we're talking about, Principles for Dealing with the Changing World Order, Why Nations Succeed and Fail.
Oh, cool.
As a follow-up to his first book, Principles, which was more about personal and sort of corporate. And so Ray Dalio is he's a billionaire, hedge fund guy, right? And his claim to fame, if you will, the reason he's been so successful is he has always been a student of human behavior and patterns. Mm-hmm. So now he's applied, he's looked at, I can't remember, I'm only starting the book, but he like numerous empires in history, and some of them very specifically, the British Empire, the Roman Empire, Egypt, right? And he's looked for patterns in that, in those societies that led to basically the Dutch as well, the downfall. Mm-hmm. And it so far, it's not looking good for the American Empire and us. But I'm also finding it kind of reassuring is the wrong word, but you know, we always tend to kind of worry about what's happening in our, you know, like, oh my God, why is this happening? Is there nothing to be done? And if the answer is, in fact, this is just part of a natural cycle of human society and civilization, there may not be anything to be done. It's just like, you don't have to really, like, it's okay to just let it go, right? Because he talks about how we have these rises and everything's great. Then we have a bunch of wars and like everything is really shitty. And then a new world order, overused term, comes up. And then there's a long prosperity, usually about 70 to 100 years where things are great and then things are shitty again. So yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting.
Okay.
But you see stuff like education becoming derided. You see gaps in between the wealthy. You see a gap in values within one empire, right?
Well, how far are you gotten through the book?
I'm about two chapters in.
Okay, right? Cool.
Yeah. So at the end, he's got predictions, and I guess on his website, for all of the major countries of the world, including Canada. Yeah. So I'm holding off to read the book, and then I'll check out his predictions.
Interesting.
But, yeah.
Kind of cool.
So it is.
So I've got a recommendation for a book. So I'm going to start listening to it. So I don't really read books as much as listen to books, but it's called Kasher in the Rye. It's by Moshe Kasher.
He's
a comedian, and it's all about his life with all kinds of mental health issues.
Oh, interesting.
So my wife thinks it's really good.
He's a comedian.
Yeah.
Because mental health issues are funny.
Apparently.
If you've got them yourself.
Yeah. Is he
Canadian?
It's an autobiography.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think he's American.
Okay, I haven't heard of him.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I'll see. And did you watch the first episode of Loki?
We have not watched any Loki yet.
Have you watched all of Ahsoka?
Nope. I have one more episode to go.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
What else, anything else you've been consuming? Not really. You're getting ready for your party.
This week's been busy, but no, I'm still chipping away at Enterprise, you know, rewatching that, and then Justified. I think I'm on season 6 now. So
how many seasons are there?
There's 6, and then they just released that sort of 2023, 15 year later kind of deal.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to that, but it's such a great show.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, I did really enjoy it. Yeah. I did not get as far as you have.
It's getting dark here. The whole show's been.
It was pretty dark.
Yeah, nothing compared to Ozark, though. Oh, my God. That show's dark from, like, the go, right?
And it gets darker every episode. It gets
worse and worse, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Okay. Anyway, that's it for this week, I think.
What about any other media? The Marvels is coming.
Well, I've watched Loki, the first episode. My wife is like, you can't watch Loki without me. Okay.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it takes off. It starts exactly where season one left off.
Right.
So it's really good. And confusing.
One variant of Kang back in the 1800s, isn't it? That last scene?
Doesn't, yeah, no.
Or was that a scene after a movie? This is where
Loki's running. So he's like running and it takes off right when he's located.
Oh, I think the scene I'm thinking of was the after scene. It might have been in Quantumania, or I think it was in Quantumania. No, Quantumania. It was the Council of Kangs.
Well, I think the Council of Kangs is going to come back. But,
and then, but there's one where it's 1800 and Loki and Morbius are in the audience. Yeah,
But in Loki, I think at the end, Sylvie pushes Loki in through a time portal.
Right.
And then she kills Kang.
Right.
So I think that's where it kind of left off. So this is for him going through the
time. Well, I am looking forward to it.
So so that's where it starts.
Yeah.
So
I am enjoying Ahsoka.
Ahsoka is really good. It kind of interesting ending. And I won't give anything away associated with it, but there's a lot of loose ends that lead to other things. So it's,
well, I think there is going to be a season 2.
Yeah.
Assuming Disney doesn't go out of business, but
And the other thing, so I was watching is this German Netflix series called Dear Child. And
Dear Child?
It's kind of a horror.
What is it? Das Kinder!
I guess so. I don't know.
Germans always seem like they're angry.
Yeah.
Auf Wiedersehen! Yeah, goodbye to you too.
Well, it's like...
Take it easy, man.
Well, have you ever seen those things where they compared different languages for words? Like, hospital is like hospital in French, and hospital, and then in Krankenhaus is in German, right? Like or all these,
it's the Saxon root, right?
It's this super hard kind of
Krankenhaus.
So it's like just very, anyway.
Nice people.
That's it.
There you go.
Have a great week.
On to episode 14 next week.
13.
I thought this was 13.
No, it's 12.
Well, what the hell? See ya.
That's what you said at the beginning of the episode.
See you in 2 weeks.
Okay. Talk to you later. Goodbye.